morning, members. Good morning, honourable floor. My apologies for being late. I see there are other... Not well, thanks. I see there are other members that are still not here either. There was a diesel spill on the N2, and I presume that everybody's a bit held up by that. I don't want to delay further, so let's start. The first presentation of the day is the South African Hunters and Game Conservation Association, so we will start with your presentation first. You can please just introduce yourselves and then carry on. Thanks.
Honourable Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity to make a short presentation to you. My name is Fred Kampfer. I'm the President of the South African Hunters and Game Conservation Association. Next to me is Dani Venter, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the association. Ladies and gentlemen, we represent the biggest single association of hunters, conservationists and sport shooters in the country. The association was established in 1949 and we have, as of yesterday, 34,155 paid up members. I deliberately had the number checked yesterday. As an association, we are known for constructive participation in the legislative process with respect to firearms and the use of firearms, and we have been in contact with the South African Police Service in this context fairly frequently and fairly often. I am confident that the Secretary of Police and General Jacobs next to her would confirm that, and you don't need to ask them while we're here. You can ask them behind our backs. I'm sure they will confirm that we have been participating in a constructive way. With respect to the Dangerous Weapons Bill, the association acknowledges and supports the rationalisation of the legislation, but we oppose the inclusion of firearms in the bill, the ambiguity of the definitions, and the latitude of discretion to the law enforcers that are envisaged in the process. On the matter of the inclusion of firearms in the bill, we are of the opinion that the existing legislation that covers the ownership and possession and use of firearms is certainly adequate to address also the needs of the bill. I'm sure that you're aware that there are quite a number of pieces of legislation that governs the ownership and use of firearms, such as the Firearms Control Act, the Criminal Procedure Act, the Control of Public Buildings Act, as well as the Public Gathering Act. One of the things that we find strange, if we look at the objects of this bill as it is defined, is the fact that it explicitly states the bill furthermore seeks to prohibit the possession of dangerous weapons, firearms, and so on. That, we believe, may be in contrast and conflicting with the Firearms Control Act that allows legal possession of firearms for legal use thereof. The purpose of the bill, in our view, has also changed over time. We understand that at the outset the intention was to consolidate the existing pieces of legislation on dangerous weapons. We participated in the consultation process of that, but in our view, as it stands now, the purpose of the bill has changed with the inclusion of firearms. The inclusion of firearms, in our view, was also not part and parcel of the consultation process in which we participated. The implications hereof, in our view, is significant and could be significant for hunters and sport shooters and these implications have not been considered as part and parcel of the consultation process. While we oppose the inclusion of firearms in the strongest possible terms, and we are of the opinion that it could create a number of new problems, we also want to indicate that in terms of other legislation, I may legally possess a firearm and I may use it, and this conflict creates a problem for us. We are of the opinion that there is ambiguity in the definition of a dangerous weapon in the context where the law enforcer may have to take decisions on matters such as, was the object designed, can it produce death, is it a weapon, and could it be used as a weapon? We believe that needs attention and needs to be clarified much more than it is at the moment. With respect to the latitude of discretion, and this is the only instance where we will refer to specific parts of the Act, other than that we address ourselves to principles rather than detail in the bill. In Section 2, Subsection 2, A, B, and C, it is clear that judgment and interpretation is required of the law enforcer with respect to this bill. That, in practice, we believe may create a problem. And I will illustrate that by citing an example of one of the things that happened with one of our members. In short, our view is that in a society where we are already expecting too much of an overburdened police force, and most probably inadequately trained police force as well, we now add another responsibility and another burden to policemen and women, for which they may just not have the ability to really address this. The example that I want to cite to you is the by now most probably well-known and reported case of one of our members, Mr. Scott. He's a professional hunter. He was awarded a $50 million amount in a case against the South African Police Service. In short, the facts are as follows. As a professional hunter, he was awaiting the arrival of clients of his in Musina. He got a call from his colleague that was on the way from the airport to Musina with the American clients, and he arranged that he would meet them just outside the town of Musina. He left the restaurant where he was, and in the parking area of the restaurant, he got robbed by a gang of people. He was beaten over the head and across the mouth with a piece of iron pipe. His jacket was ripped off, and at that point, the muggers ran away and the police arrived. And here was this man standing, clearly having been in a fight with his mouth bleeding. He could not speak to them. He had a handgun in a holster that was strapped to his body. It was exposed, or part of it was exposed, because his jacket was taken off. He got arrested and he was taken into jail. His cell phone was taken away, and he could not even call his clients to apologize for the fact that he could not receive them. The whole process has now been going for quite some time, and the end of the result of that was that he was awarded $50 million because of the fact that he was arrested illegally or unlawfully. Now, this is a classical example of judgment made by policemen and women in a particular set of circumstances that have been inappropriate. Now, if we look at the wording of the bill in that particular section, it states, any person who is in possession of and I'm just going to quote certain parts of that, a firearm under circumstances which may raise a reasonable suspicion. That's exactly what the policeman did in this particular instance. If you then continue to subsection 2 of the bill, the circumstances that should have been taken into consideration is the place and time where the person is found, the general behavior of the person, and the manner in which the firearm is carried or displayed. Now, most probably, for the ordinary human being like me, in the circumstances, I could have argued this is exactly what happened, that's why the man got locked up. Yet, it's only part of the whole story. And this is what we expect policemen and women to be able to do, to make a judgment call in circumstances like that, which might just be extremely difficult. And under the pressure under which policemen and women already work in the country, we believe it's inappropriate to add this burden to them. Ladies and gentlemen, and that is the suggestions that we have to offer. That is what we would have wanted to address you on. We made a written submission. Should there be any questions, we'll try and answer as best as we can. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm first going to ask the department to respond to the concerns raised, and then I'm going to open up for members for questions. Can you please switch off your microphone? And can I ask you to take notes once members start asking questions? You will be given an opportunity at the end to answer those questions.
I'll just raise one comment and then I'll ask Chairman Jacobs to also fully respond. I think that the issues around the firearms, you asked us to look at some amendments which I think would cover the concerns that have been raised when we presented later this afternoon. But I think, I was saying that some of the amendments that the Portfolio Committee asked us to look at should deal with some of the concerns that have been raised in the presentation. But I think the issue of reasonableness and criminality in terms of the police, I think that if we've already said to the Portfolio Committee that this bill needs to be accompanied by an implementation plan that looks at the training of police officers. And hopefully that will also address the issue of how police officers make a judgment call.
Just to make one thing, the Portfolio Committee said to the department that it needs to be accompanied by implementation plan, training and costing.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I can just mention that the definition will definitely receive some attention. And we want to make a proposal to the committee in that regard, and just for the benefit of the guests, there were a lot of proposals that the definition should be widened. Then in respect of some of the other concerns, the question of exceptions, we want to make proposals that we already discussed with the committee regarding some exceptions that will apply regarding lawful pursuit of any lawful activity or employment. Then lastly, regarding the issue of the Firearms Control Act, the proposal that we have mentioned in the committee was that we want to actually delete the references in the part of the Act that deals with the general prohibition on the carrying of dangerous weapons, to delete the portion that deals with firearms. And the proposal is that we will then amend Section 120 of the Firearms Control Act that already deals with the possession of a firearm for an unlawful purpose. And I can just maybe read out on how the wording is in that section. It says, if any person or no person may be in possession of any firearm, airgun, etc., or imitation firearm or ammunition with intent to commit an offense or to use it to resist an arrest or prevent the arrest of another person. So it will fit in with the present wording of that section. And then the exceptions that we are dealing with in the dangerous weapons bill will then also be reflected in the Firearms Control Act. Chair, I think that addresses most of the concerns. The issue about the reference to the objects of the bill. Of course, when we draft the bill and we publish it for comments, it still has to go to the state law advisors, and there's always something dealing with objects and that type of thing. So I don't really... What we intend to do with the bill is to comply with the Constitutional Court to rationalise the legislation and to have a simple set of legislation that will apply to the whole country as such. Thank you, Chair.
Members, I open up for questions. Ms. Molivatsi and Honourable Mzorbo, in that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. Let me
thank the presentation. My question is on the, you spoke of the, can you elaborate on the new problems that you envisage in this, the inclusion of the word firearm that you are so strongly opposed to? My other question is on, you spoke of the overburdening of staffs. Do you have any doubt in your mind that, and of course you also gave an example of unlawful arrest of the example that you gave. Do you have any doubt that that staff is capable and has the capacity to continue with it? Do you have any doubt? Thank you.
Honourable Zogun.
Chairperson, I wonder if the presenter, maybe after the department has had input, maybe the presenter will respond and say that what do they say about what did the department have said about the inclusion of the firearms, because that is important to them. And secondly, it's a bit enough of proof, Chairperson. I think what my colleague has just asked the question now is a question that I will raise. If you say there is a burden to the police and so on and so forth, the police have to execute their duties correctly, and they must be informed of what they are doing. But now I heard that the department has already responded to that. That's the only thing that you came up with. There are only two things: is the firearm and the burden. I wonder if now we are comfortable because of what the department has said about it. Because that's where I saw your problem. Nice. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kula Barnard, Honourable Mulaleki George, Honourable Groenewold.
Chair, and apologies for my delay. There was an accident on the freeway. Chair, I think this, and this may well be addressed equally by the department, but that particular case that you referred to, and the case where the ministry had to pay $50 million out, I understand completely that in fact could be the norm. And we have looked at the wording, and we're looking at the wording of and the possibility of criminalizing intent. Is something that we do need to look at, I think, and revisit, because I think this is exactly the fear that many of the presenters have expressed, that, well, what if a police officer just says, I looked as though I wanted to shoot someone, and that police officer either hasn't been trained adequately or has a grudge or a million other reasons, and if it's a he said, she said situation, it's quite possible that the police officer's word will be taken over that of a civilian. In your instance, or in that particular case, obviously it was beyond inexcusable. I would put it to you, do you have, and I, possibly it's along the lines of Honourable Malavati, but do you have a suggestion of how you believe it would be worded that would make it more of giving more protection to citizens who have no intent? And from the department side, perhaps if you have reworded that as we were looking at last week, perhaps we could see if and put it forward that there is something perhaps in the pipeline to change this, because it is an issue, it's a huge issue, and if anyone imagines that in a matter of time all our SAPS members will be adequately trained in this, they just have to look at the Domestic Violence Act and the non-training that's gone on there, or criminal justice, or child justice. Many acts simply are not understood adequately at that grassroots level and may well end up with a repetition, and many repetitions of the sort of case you're talking about.
Honourable Muleleki George, can I ask members to we'll debate the issues later on, to ask your questions of clarity, please.
Madam Chairperson, you welcome. Thank you very much for your presentation. And especially me, I'm not seeing you for some years.
George, please get to the question.
I know you and I worked with you people when I was in this top country. So happy to see you again. You complain about the definition of the dangerous weapons. And it's a very complex matter which you are raising. Because an axe, which is meant for cutting wood and other important duties, used for wrong reasons, it can be a dangerous weapon. So in my question to you, how do you expect them? In fact, I was interested how the department, but I'll deal with that when we're debating. But I'm asking you, how do you expect them to narrow this definition so that it is not broad and steep? Because I think, whilst I also not comfortable with this being so broad, but I also understand the problem. But I would like you to help us. How do you think we can help? You also believe that the purposes of the bail has been changed, as you know, that it was meant to put together the different laws from South Africa, Transkei, Bukut, and Tuna Benda in Suskar. Now, you seem to be believing that the issue of firearms should have been left out. How did you expect that to be done? Because a firearm is a dangerous weapon. So how did you expect that to be done? And because you participated, and as you said, and you believe that your views were not taken into consideration. The other laws, any law, you'll find that any law is overlapped. Do you think it is fundamentally wrong to have firearms that are in Criminal Procedure Act, Control of Access to Public Buildings, Public Gatherings Firearms Control Act? What is it that you see wrong? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask, in the submission, there's in the definition of a dangerous weapon, in a submission there's a proposal to change it, and I read it, dangerous weapon means an object adapted for use to become a weapon, whereas the bill refers to an object designed as a weapon. Don't you think that your proposal, an object adapted, is a bit too wide? Because then I can pick up a stone, and then it has been adapted as a weapon. That's my question. Thanks.
Can I respond to the questions, please? Honourable Chili.
When you started by saying you find it strange. I would like to understand what is it strange about, because times change, changes, laws changes, government changes, and your class was formed in 1949, and I don't think you expect that things should be the same as they were in 1949. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. I will respond to the questions and the comments in the reverse order, so I will start with the last one first. With all due respect, Madam, we do not expect things to remain as it's been in 1949. What I think we find strange is to find pieces of legislation that seems to be in conflict with each other. We would expect legislation to be supportive of each other, and you may therefore have different pieces of legislation that address the same subject, but then in support of each other, not in conflict with each other. For us, this bill is, in some sense at least, in conflict with the Firearms Control Act, and that's why I said we find this strange. It's not the intention to say things should remain as it's been in 1949. This association has also been through significant change, and we accept that things will change. With respect to the comment, the question from Mr. Groenewald on the definition, where we suggested that an object is adapted, we could also say used or intended to be used as a dangerous weapon. The Honourable Member referred to the use of a stone as a dangerous weapon, and in fact, in our view, that's exactly true. There are circumstances, and there may be circumstances, where a stone may be a more dangerous weapon than a firearm. We would not disagree with that at all. I'm fairly confident that there are people that are killed by stones and by bricks and half bricks, most probably more than killed by firearms in certain circumstances. With respect to the Honourable Mr. George, the matter that he addressed is, in essence for us, the question, is a firearm not a dangerous weapon? We would agree wholeheartedly a firearm can be a dangerous weapon. That is not what we argue. What we argue is there is adequate legislation to govern the possession and use of firearms. It's not necessary to include it in this bill and in legislation that may be created as a result of this bill being enacted. He also referred to the fact that legislation overlaps, and we agree that there are different pieces of legislation that may and in fact does address the same object. When you find that, we would expect it, and in practice you would also find that it is supportive pieces of legislation, not contradicting legislation. The example that I want to quote is once again, the Firearms Control Act provides for the legal possession of firearms, whereas if I read this bill, it addresses, as the heading to Section 2, the prohibition of firearms. Now, you've got one piece of legislation, the Firearms Control Act, that says I may legally possess a firearm, and here you've got another piece of legislation that wants to prohibit the possession of a firearm. That is what we argue does not make sense. If I then go back to the Honourable Member Carla Barnard that referred to the case of Mr. Scott, with suggestion on how to word some of the definitions and some of the changes. We have made a suggestion on a change in the definition that could be used, but there could also be different uses. You may, for instance, not define it as an object that is adapted, but just define it as an object that is used as a dangerous weapon or intended to be used as a dangerous weapon, in our view, could also work. On the matter of citizens that may be concerned and whether there may be intent and to protect citizens, we are confident that there is a concern amongst citizens and in particular around our members. Most of the hunting in the country does not happen in and around the cities. It happens in the rural areas. That's where the game is, that's where the birds are that are hunted, and that's where people go to hunt. Most often what you will find is that when the training is done, where the bulk of the people are concentrated in the cities is also where you would concentrate the training of police force members. So this training, in our view, is actually needed most in the rural areas, not in the cities, and whether it gets there is an open question. I have personally been stopped in roadblocks where there are checks on the legality of the firearms that I may have with me if I've been hunting. And I've personally experienced, to a large extent, a lack of knowledge amongst the police force members in such circumstances. If you ask the majority of our members, and particularly those from the rural areas, they would, I am fairly confident, respond in a similar way that says the people are not adequately trained in the police. For us, the training is one part of it, but the bigger concern is that you expect people that are already stressed and are already overburdened to now, in difficult situations, take decisions which are more complicated and even more difficult, and that's what we worry about. So the issue for us is not necessarily the lack of training with the police force members, but rather that you, while they are already overburdened, you now want to put another burden on them, which could have been addressed in a different way. With respect to the question and the comments by the Honourable Mr. Ndlovu on the Firearms Act and the matter of the burden of proof, it is true. The burden of proof will rest with the police eventually. But what happens is I get locked up on a Friday. The case may appear in court on a Monday, perhaps Friday next week. And as has happened with Mr. Scott, it's taken him quite some time. His business is ruined. His business is blacklisted in the United States of America. He, as a person, is prohibited from getting into the United States of America. He's now found not guilty, and let's assume it's 12 or 18 months later, but it's too late. He's already lost the ability to earn an income through the work that he's done. So just the lapse of time in the process, in any case, is to the detriment of the individual. With respect to the comments of Mrs. Molepatsi, whether we envisage new problems due to the inclusion of firearms in this bill, we are fairly confident that we will see those. And allow me to waste your time and just sketch another scenario for you. You may most certainly have a situation where in winter time, when it's the hunting season, you have a combi with 10 middle-aged white males like me, whose hair starts to grow grey, in a combi. They are just short of Messina. They stop next to the road to have coffee, and there happens to be a village 50 yards away. A policeman stops there. In the same combi, you've got 30 firearms, and it may even be more amongst these 10 people. All they do is they go on a hunting trip. They're happy, it's a week's break away from the office, and they're going to go hunt. They have coffee, they are joyful, they laugh and they have fun. Now you leave the judgment to this policeman as to whether these people intend to do harm to those people in the village 50 yards away. They're 10 people, they've got 30 firearms, what's the purpose hereof? Now, if you're not a hunter and you do not understand that you could use 30 firearms on a hunting trip, it gets extremely difficult to make that judgment call and say, this is okay, let these guys have their coffee, pack up the mugs and get going in their combi again. General Jacobs, the definition that you indicated will receive attention we are grateful of. There certainly will be exceptions in that we understand. If your intention is to take the parts from this bill that refers to the possession and use of firearms and you want to move that to the Firearms Control Act, we would appreciate it. So if you take firearms out of this bill in total, we're not going to argue. We say thank you very much. We appreciate the fact that you understand what it is that we argue. And if you then make changes to the Firearms Control Act, provided that we go through a process to debate the principles, we would support that wholeheartedly. And in principle, the same with Ms. Irish Kobashiani that referred to amendments that may be made. We certainly are not aware of everything that's been discussed in this committee already. But we appreciate the fact that there may be envisaged changes, and we would appreciate it if that happens. If firearms are taken out of this bill, we would support it wholeheartedly, and we would not argue much further. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you for your answer. Can I just say that Ms. Irish Kobashiani and General Jacobs will have to convince this committee about their arguments. There's no longer time, or that's why we're having this public hearings now. We're taking consideration what you're saying, but the interaction that you now need to have is with this committee, because it's this committee that will make the final changes on this bill. We would, however, encourage that you test some of these issues as you draft them with the people that have raised concerns. There were concerns last week as well. May I just say that from our side, we would rather see a police stopping and inquiring in the correct way, whether it's 30 white grey Afrikaner men or 30 African grey, like Tatum Zorba over there, African men, it doesn't matter. As a committee, we would rather see them stopping those people, but through the right processes determining, and that's why we're looking specifically at Section C, 2, to extend that in terms of what are the checks that they must go through. Obviously, I think one of the things that we should put in there, if firearms remain, is the issue of firearm licenses. Do they have the licenses with them as well? Thank you very much for your presentation. Our next presentation, can I just get an indication, Gunfree South Africa? You can continue from there, just introduce yourselves, please.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My name is Alan Storey. I'm chairperson of Gunfree South Africa, and we're very grateful for the opportunity to offer a submission on the Dangerous Weapons Bill. You do have a written submission. I'll be speaking broadly around that. Firstly, to say that Gunfree South Africa welcomes the Dangerous Weapons Bill. We are grateful for it. We recognise the need to provide certain prohibitions and restrictions in respect to the possession of dangerous weapons, firearms, and replica or imitation firearms. My oral presentation will divide up in two parts, one firearms and then the replica firearms. We would find it highly irregular to exclude firearms from a dangerous weapons bill. In fact, a firearm would be the first dangerous weapon that we would have noted. We do note that this proposed legislation does complement the Firearms Control Act. We do not believe it is at odds with the Firearms Control Act. We believe it is overlap, which would be strange if there were not overlapping, and we believe that it actually lends support. And just to say, from Gunfree South Africa's perspective, the Firearms Control Act that came in from 2000 to 2004 was, has been the most incredible piece of legislation. It really
has. I don't think I have that, the submission. Is there a copy of it?
Submission?
It's not in my...
It should be in your file. It's just all the one that you've just had. If not, I'll ask them when they get back to give you a submission. Sorry for the interruption. We can continue.
Thank you. I'm speaking around it. I'm not reading the submission. Just to say about the Firearms Control Act, people said it was going to be impossible to implement. People raised a whole lot of concerns. The government pressed through with it. And over the last 10 years, gun violence has reduced tremendously. The Medical Research Council, as of late, has brought out stats that have shown that other fatalities have not reduced as much, nearly as much as the gun fatalities. So we've seen the Firearms Control Act work, laborious, misunderstood the hesitation or the rejection or queries of this dangerous weapons bill is around intent. How do we figure out intent? And one of the things, especially with regard to, let's say, hunting and sporting, one of the things that we would propose that can mitigate against intent or the misunderstanding of intent would be that if a person belongs to a hunting association or a sporting club, a firearm sporting club, that those firearms are kept in the armory of those specific places. And then the association takes the burden of safekeeping of those weapons. Therefore, if I go on a hunting trip, I check out the gun, and I check it back in. I leave on the Friday, I check it out, I come back on the Monday, and I check it back in. For a number of things. It takes the onus. It's a huge responsibility to have a firearm. And therefore the onus of having a firearm should be placed on the owner. If you have a yacht and you keep it in Cape Town Harbour, you pay a lot of money for your mooring every year. And so it should be. If you have a gun, you should be paying for that safe keeping of that weapon. Now this will mitigate a whole lot of things. One, we will know that if a crime is committed in a vicinity, we can be able to see which guns were released at which time. We can make sure that guns will be properly kept. For example, at this stage, we would argue that it's impossible for the police to make sure that every gun owner is actually fulfilling the Firearms Control Act with the correct safe and that in their private home. Were guns having to be kept in sporting or hunting armories, it would be far more possible for the police to check on the safekeeping of those weapons. A reminder to this committee that we have around about 2,000 firearms going missing, either stolen or lost, every single month. That's 24,000 a year. That means the line between legal and illegal becomes very, very thin. So we offer that as a possibility. Moving on to replica firearms, our position would be we would call for an immediate outright ban. We see no need whatsoever for imitation firearms. I was just in Century City last weekend, and if you walk in there, you can go into a shop, and you stand there and the person says to you unashamedly, they are just like the real thing. My question in return, if I can't tell the difference when I'm calm 2 meters away from it, how will I be able to tell the difference in a situation of threat? So again we come to the issue of intent. How do you figure out intent? Well, we make it easy. If you ban the possession, well then intention is very clear if someone has it. It's an illegal intent. And so we would call for the outright ban so that there is no confusion around that. And that if someone is in possession of it, they have already shown that they've broken the law and therefore expose their intent. We've noted in our submission, Honourable Chairperson, around the inability of children to discern the difference between imitation guns and real guns. We would want the manufacturers of these guns to also be held responsible. So if we ban these guns, imitation guns, then we'd ask that legislation be brought in for the fining of retailers as well as manufacturers in this area. And then finally, We realize that this kind of legislation brings debate, what we're doing here, and if it were passed, it would bring further debate. And we actually think that's your role to educate society by the laws that we make. That it be an educated approach. Do we really want imitation guns? Do we really want more guns in this country? And so we would invite this committee to think, when you are considering this, what kind of country do we actually want to live in? And allow that to give you a boldness to write legislation that will somehow hold the values of the country that we long for. We're grateful for your time, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It's interesting that you're raising the issue of Century City. More than 2 or 3 years ago, during deliberations on amendments to the firearm bill, I raised that very same shop for SAPS. And I still believe SAPS needs to go and have a look at that shop in Century City. And SAPS needs to go and have a look at it, not looking like police officers, but looking like ordinary customers when you enter there. It is frightening. It is really frightening. Members, questions? Honourable George, Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Koolabarnat.
I just want to thank the Gun Free sort of for everything that they've said. I don't think there's much difference between them and us. But there's a problem. I think they're moving. They say imitation stroke replica guns must be banned. Totally. Doubt you don't. That you must also remember, if you say they must be banned, what about television, where every time you are shown people using firearms, not only toy guns, firearms to kill? Now, these kids, because they've been deprived now of their toy guns, they've been deprived, but they'll be seeing them in television. So what is your take on guns that are shown in television? Sometimes played with, sometimes used for criminal activities.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I can just say to the gentleman, he said that can we just imagine a country without guns?
Yes.
I just want to say, can you imagine a country without crime? That would be wonderful. People are carrying firearms because they have to protect them against crime. I just want to know from the gentleman, he says that all imitation replica firearms were banned in an effort to end the needless injuries and deaths related to these firearms. Now maybe I'm missing something, Chairperson. Can the gentleman explain to me how injuries and deaths to the imitation of the replica of firearms, not the real one, can occur? He said that if you're carrying a firearm, you have to be a responsible person. I quite agree. If you're carrying a replica or an imitation, if you point it to someone, especially the police, you must take the responsibility. So can you please explain to me, how can you get injured and even be killed with plainly an imitation? Thank you.
I think a lot of what you raised is in fact already covered in the existing legislation, the firearm legislation. For example, this business of forcing hunters to leave their firearms in an armory, that's all already covered in the existing legislation. They have their own firearm safes. The firearms are kept in those safes. And we're not working on the firearm legislation. We're working on a different bill. The imitation guns, to have them all painted pink, and that we actually had a comment by the Secretary of Police that in fact there are real guns that are pink apparently and blue and all sorts of colours, but to instruct all manufacturers to do that would have a huge impact on some of the gaming people. For example, the Airsoft people came earlier and they play the games and they use replica weapons which shoot little things that couldn't enter your skin even if they held it to your arm. They're not doing, using and playing their games with evil intent, with criminal intent. The child issue, well, of course, no child should have any access to any firearm, and that's also covered in the firearm legislation. Now, I'm wondering what you think of the clause about intent. You know, it's causing consternation to hunters and to gaming people, etc. I thought it was fairly clearly laid out, but you patently don't. I mean, is that certainly not covered by adequately in the proposed bill? That if someone is carrying something with intent, if it's a fake firearm or a real firearm or any kind of weapon and about to bash someone's head, it's a dangerous weapon. I thought that was quite clearly covered. Give me your input on that one, please.
Honourable Mlogo.
Chairperson, there is a perception to the presenter that with a stroke of a pen, when you say things can happen immediately, you cannot just ban things because they are manufactured somewhere, somehow, just like that. It's a process. I think that's the process that the chairperson has elaborated on it, that we are here to make a process. Now, when you say, as a presenter, say that manufacturers of this gun should be stopped. In other words, it should happen tomorrow or yesterday. You don't take into account the process of doing that. You are saying as if we are talking to somebody and saying that stop what we are doing now before I kill you, and then that person will stop because you say you will kill him. But these manufacturers derive their incomes and so on and so forth, and they have taxes and so on. I wonder what is in your mind if you say that statement, because I wanted to go into your understanding of why do you say that? How? Where do you come from? Where do you come from by saying that? What is in your mind if you say that these manufacturers must be penalized or must be stopped doing this thing? Just like that, if you put it like that, what is in your mind? What is the background of that idea? Thank you very much.
Give you an opportunity to respond, and thereafter give the department an opportunity if there's anything they want to add.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the questions. I'm going to do it in reverse order again. So, Honourable Ndlovu, I'll try and respond to you first. You're quite right. It's a process, but law is part of the process. We know that very well in this country. We've made laws that have reversed tremendous grievances. And it didn't happen straight away after the law was being made. But once the law is down, then there's a whole long process of trying to adhere to that law. And the process of those who are not adhering to the law are held accountable by that law. So when we say, let us ban all imitation, we say, what do we need imitation replica firearms for? How is that contributing to the well-being of this country? How is it contributing? It's not contributing at all. So we can outlaw them, and then it will be a process. To suggest that some people may benefit from it has never been a good moral argument. That some people may benefit from the manufacturing of different things, they may even pay taxes, but if that thing that they are manufacturing does not contribute to the well-being of the nation, then we would hold that into question. To Honourable Barnard, the intent, I mean, it is difficult, so we've understood that obviously it's going to be our trained police officers who need to make that judgment call. I mean, that's what their job is. They have to make that judgment call all the time. So to think that this is a unique case is not so. And making judgment calls all the time about criminal intent. And we would say that to make it easier for them is that if they knew that it was against the law to have a replica or imitation firearm, if they knew that, then that may well help them in discerning to their correct suspicion that they have criminal intent.
I really think
that we will not get that police officers spend their life figuring out intent all the time. That this bill is simply stating the obvious of what a police officer does all the time. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. If they get it wrong, then there is legal recourse against that. I would rather have a police force that is going to be stopping and inquiring. And where we find that they are not empowered or skilled, we need to empower and skill them. But that does not mean that we should water down this bill. Honourable Hunnewald, you're quite correct. If a firearm is a replica or an imitation, it cannot be lethal. So there is a mistake in the presentation. My apology for that. The threat is the trauma sustained. So if someone holds a gun at you and robs you, you may never know whether that was a real or an imitation firearm. And therefore, the trauma that you have to process thereafter would be the same. But you're quite right. That unless it is a firearm that has been an imitation that can be adapted, then it may be lethal. But if not, thank you for your correction there. And then, Honourable George, the practicalities, like anything, when we make a law, then you set a date, and if a merchant is selling replica firearms, and it's now illegal to do that, they are removed from the shop floor. And then it's a process of implementation of that law. We've done it on different things. We do it all the time, in fact. People close down shebeens. People close down different shops if they are operating at certain times in certain areas where they shouldn't be. So it's a game. It's passed the law. Through the law, we educate people. It speaks of the vision of what country we'd like, and then we need to uphold and implement the law. It's not going to be overnight. It will be a process. Thank you.
There's just one follow-up question. I'm just going to allow this. Can you make it short, please, Bruce? We need to carry on.
Sure, Chair. I just didn't have an answer to my question about the gaming industry, which is a multi... Yeah, I think you forgot that. And I just wanted to follow up on... You're considering banning all plastic guns, etc. Now, how on earth do you do that? You have guns in every toy box in the country. Are you suggesting police are now going to go in and stop rifling toy boxes? How does one rid the country of millions of guns that are playing cops and robbers in playgrounds all around the country? I mean, that's some kind of idyllic thing you're thinking of. I just can't see any way on this earth that that could practically be implemented.
You can continue.
The response of whether you can't see it or not is not a good argument about not implementing it. If it is right, then we do it. There are many people who have sat in these benches over the years who said what could and can't happen, and it has come to pass, and we are grateful for their courage. And so I would want to say that if a bill had to come out like this, it would create an incredible opportunity for us to teach specifically our children about what you never play with. You never play with it. Gaming, we need to ask questions about that. That may be other legislation. TV, Honourable George mentioned it. It's terrible what we are saturated with. And a bill like this can draw attention to that. I'm not naive to think we're going to stop the $1 billion gaming and TV industry. But I think we need to focus on it. What can we do at this time in the context of this country that has too many deaths by guns? Let's make a difference in that.
Anything from the department side? Don't feel obliged if you don't have anything to say, but if you do, carry on.
I think some of the issues that guns we are raising are interesting, but I think that also need to be raised in the Firearms Control Amendment Act, like, for example, the issue of storage. It's something that the UK does, in fact. But it's something that needs to be addressed in the Firearms Control Amendment as opposed to the dangerous weapons. And I think that's the only comment that we would have to make.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm trying to find out whether T please there. Anon Polero, sorry, no, it's not your job. If you can just check for me, please. Otherwise, we're going to start with the session now. Just bear with us for 1 minute. Next 5 minutes. I think we're opening up an interesting discussion around the whole issue of toy firearms and replica firearms in a country where last week and the week before we saw an outcry regarding violence against women, and specific two cases that brought it out again into the open. It's also the way we say we need a change in society, but we continue to differentiate between daughters plays with dolls and boys plays with guns. And somehow when they become 30 or 40 and they become violent, Mr. Groenewald, I'm not saying we must ban anything, so we then want to change that attitude of boys. And it's something I think, as we are, I believe Parliament is also having a debate on this issue today. But it's something that this country will have to apply its mind to. Not only this committee, the country will have to apply its mind to in terms of how do we get back to a situation where violence is not the option to solve differences. It's not only gun violence, it's many other pieces of violence as well. He's going to be ready in about 5 minutes, they say. Now, I want to just get a feeling whether we break now for tea. People can go bathrooms, come and get tea, and then we be back at on that. It's now 10 to 11. We're back 5 past 11, and we start with the next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
quite a lengthy presentation. Can I indicate to you that we have allocated 15 to 20 minutes per presentation? So if you can fit in your presentation in that time, please, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Charlene May. I'm an attorney with the Legal Resources Centre. My colleague is Mandiva Varera Murareko, and to the back of me is Mr. Sheehan Elipina. And we basically make up the gender project of the Cape Town Office of the Legal Resources Centre. As you might know, the LRC is a human rights public interest law clinic, and we have offices in Johannesburg, Durban, Kraaijstad, and in Cape Town. We want to focus our presentation to you this morning on the focus area that we specialize in, which is gender law. And as part of our gender focus area, we represent women in both sexual offenses as well as domestic violence matters. We implement in a range of areas, ranging from advocacy to litigation to education. We want to focus, as I said, our submissions, strictly limiting ourselves to issues around domestic violence and the possible impact that this legislation has on domestic violence victims. Over the past 2 years, we have seen, assisted, and represented over 180 women in domestic violence matters. During our consultations and perusing the application forms, there's a clear indication that there's a regular use of common household items in the commission of what is often violent physical abuse. If I can give you some examples of what is used in domestic violence cases that present themselves to us. It's often household items such as cups. We've had an incident of a hot plate stove, broken bottles, sometimes whole bottles being broken over someone's head, wood, planks, belts, belt buckles. Just yesterday, while we were preparing to come to you today, we had an incident of a woman coming in having been battered with a porridge bowl. A porridge bowl. While she was presenting breakfast to her husband, he took the bowl and battered her with it. The current legal framework that protects women, as you know, is the Domestic Violence Act. And Section 9 in particular allows for the removal of dangerous weapons as well as firearms. And this is on the application process. So the complainant can actually ask for the removal of these weapons if they are within the respondent's possession. Our experience, however, has been that in the majority of cases, both magistrates as well as the police, including prosecutors, will only hone in on the issue of possession of a firearm. So in other words, if it's a firearm, the firearm can normally be removed, but if it's any other weapon that is alleged in the application form or during the hearing of the matter, very little interest is paid to it. The current dangerous weapons definition includes, clearly states that a dangerous weapon is any object other than a firearm which is likely to cause serious bodily injury if it were used to commit an assault. So based upon that definition, which is quite broad, we would assume that we would see more cases of ordinary weapons being in which prosecution takes place for the use of ordinary weapons during the commission of an offense. If we can just take you to the definition that is proposed in the bill. It's any object other than a firearm that is designed as a weapon and that's capable of producing death or serious bodily harm. What we are proposing is that the definition be broadened, that it is any object other than a firearm that is made or modified to kill or cause serious bodily harm, or an object that is used or intended for use in killing or causing serious bodily harm. The rationale for us wanting to broaden or to extend the definition is that it would then clearly place the dangerous weapon in three distinctive categories. It would be those items that were made for killing or to cause serious bodily harm, those that were adapted for killing or to cause serious bodily harm, or those that were neither made nor adapted for killing or causing serious bodily harm, but that are likely to cause serious bodily harm or even death if it's used during the commission of an assault. We've looked at some case law, and it would appear that based upon the current definition of the Dangerous Weapons Law, or the Dangerous Weapons Act, it would appear that our courts have interpreted that whether a weapon is likely to cause serious bodily harm must be judged by looking at the object itself. The court examines the nature and the properties of the object, So if it's a common household item, like our lady yesterday morning with a porridge bowl, or a lady a few weeks ago with the morning coffee cup, it really doesn't sway a court to see that that object is a dangerous weapon. By its nature, it was not designed to cause bodily injury. It wasn't designed to kill or to cause any harm. Yet, in the cases that we have done, they have been used to do those things. The current interpretation of the law by the courts impacts especially women and children in cases where ordinary weapons have been used in the commission of offenses against them, as they were not designed nor intended to cause physical harm or to kill. We need to be mindful of limiting the nature of charges that can be brought against the perpetrator, as they could not be charged with using a dangerous weapon under the proposed definition if it was simply an ordinary item. The clarity of the definition would play a central role in the prohibition of the possession of dangerous weapons, as it would set out the elements of the crime as well. According to the definition proposed, the elements of the prohibition would be being in possession of the object that was made or adapted for killing or inflicting bodily harm, or being in possession of an object that was neither made nor adapted for killing or causing bodily harm, but that is carried with the intent or use for the purpose of killing or causing bodily harm. This means that a perpetrator or an accused could be charged, in addition to assault or assault with the intent to do grievous bodily harm, could be charged with being in possession or having used a dangerous weapon. And then lastly, we want to touch on the issue of personal safety. Many women in South Africa carry certain items that would, with the introduction of the bill, be classified or potentially be classified as dangerous weapons for self-defense purposes. We would therefore ask that some consideration be given to the fact that this does happen and it is a reality in our country, and that as far as possible we should seek to make allowances for women that will be carrying these items for self-defense. And that's our presentation. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I looked at your written presentation as well. Thank you very much. Members, there you have it. Can I get questions of clarity? Department, do you want to respond to anything?
Chair, I think just that you asked us that after the last set of presentations to relook at the definition, and I think that the definition that we will come back to you about this afternoon when we debate it, it would broaden it sufficiently to allay some of the fears of the Legal Resource Centre has, because it's been raised by a number of presenters. I think we clarified the issue of self-defence last week when the presentations were there, that the bill does definitely, it's about criminal intent as opposed to self-defence, so that there would be no prohibitions on people that are carrying pepper spray, etc., for self-defence.
Honourable Ndlovu, Honourable George, in that order.
Chairperson, I just want the presenter to elaborate on the paragraph which says we need to be mindful of delimiting the nature of the charges that can be brought against a perpetrator, as they could not be charged with using a dangerous weapon under the proposed definition if it was an ordinary item. What does that mean? If you can just elaborate on that so that I'll understand what you're talking about. Thanks.
Well, George?
Thank you very much, and thank you. You raise a very important issue, but I don't know how. The issue of when police arrive where there is violence or family violence, they remove firearms, but they don't remove other things. The problem is that how do you expect police, because if you look at what is in the house, the whole catalog, could be changed to dangerous weapons, unless we're going to say now we must change cutlery, probably use plastic even in our house. So that's my first problem. Probably I need clarity on it. It's a pity you rushed, because you were one of the first few people where you did not only disagree with the definition, but you came with an alternate definition, which this one of a dangerous weapon for self-defense. You see, you are creating a problem for yourself. You make a good suggestion, but once you say they must be allowed now to have dangerous weapons for self-defense, it goes back. That is why I don't want to get properly discussed this. And this thing of intent is going to be a very huge issue on this bill. But probably you can explain that these dangerous weapons allowed for self-defense, is it also practical?
Honourable Groenewold.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, now, quite interesting proposal here, but I just want to ask the member, if I look at your proposed definition, and then you categorize it, you give three distinctive categories, and on those three categories, I want to ask you, if I take a knife, for instance, where will you categorize that? Because you can have a hunter's knife, you have other knives. Sometimes I see in my kitchen with my wife, there are some knives there that I'm looking at very carefully that you use it in the correct manner and everything like that. Where will you fit that in? Because I have a bit of a problem on the definitions. Thank you.
Honourable Chilling.
You know, there's nothing that we see when it comes to children and women. It may not be any object, but just the ordinary hand of a man kills. Sorry.
Honourable Member, you're protected. They just can't hear. Just speak into the microphone, please.
What I'm saying is that there is nothing that is facing men with even without objects. A man can just squeeze your neck, you can die even or a child. That is absolutely children and women. So it's just I don't know how would you call it. A woman is killed by just wrestling with it, with her. That's why I'm saying nothing is safe for women. A woman. Oh, amen. I thought you said it instead of amen. Thank you, Chair
President. Honourable Chair, just switch off your microphone, please. I'm going to give you an opportunity to answer the questions, but go through your proposed definition again, because I think in a way, even if we adapt it, it's talking to what we have said, after the department to look at as well. So while you go through it, have a look at it, and take members through it again, please. Over to you.
Thank you. I think I'll start off with the definition and just looking at it again. So the current definition of a dangerous weapon is any object other than a firearm which is likely to cause serious bodily injury and if it was used to commit an assault. So the current definition, the way that it stands, it is actually quite broad. And it could include a range of items, and it could even include common household items. Our problem that we've picked up, as I've indicated, has really been with how that definition has translated through the case law, in that because it's so specific, courts have looked at what the nature of the item is or the object is. And then it doesn't come across, if it's just a teacup, doesn't come across as being a dangerous weapon. In the current definition that is being proposed in the bill, it says that it's any object other than a firearm that is designed as a weapon and capable of producing death or serious bodily harm. What we're proposing is that perhaps the proposed definition is too limiting and that it focuses on it being an object that has been designed as a weapon and that's capable of producing death or serious bodily injury. It certainly is in line with how the courts have interpreted the current legislation. However, what we think would be more realistic, based upon the experiences that we have, is that people don't necessarily go out to purchase a hunting knife in order to commit an offense. Some people certainly do, but the common occurrence during domestic violence incidents is that I'm not going to go out to procure a weapon that is designed as a weapon and capable of killing. I'm going to use anything that I find that's close by in that moment of anger or rage. And therefore, by limiting and simply stating that it has to be a weapon that has been designed as a weapon, we feel that we'd be missing an opportunity to address what's currently happening within society. And so we're asking that if any object other than a firearm that's made or modified to kill or cause serious bodily harm, or that it's an object that is used or intended for use in killing or causing serious bodily harm. And we think that by including objects, and as I go on to say that the proposed definition will place dangerous weapons in three distinctive categories, we will then have those items that were made for killing or for causing serious bodily harm. And I'm assuming that this is where Honourable Member's question arose with the knife and the hunting knife. I'm afraid that I'm not well versed in what would qualify or classify as a hunting knife, although I'm sure that some of the things in my kitchen look equally scary. But for me, the knife would probably fall into that first category. And then there's those items that can be adapted for killing or to cause serious bodily harm. And then thirdly, it would be those items that were neither made nor adapted for killing or causing serious bodily harm, but that if used, it could cause serious bodily harm or death. And what we do further on is we go on to talk about the clarity that the definition would play a central role in the prohibition of the possession of a dangerous weapon, as it would allow for both the police as well as the prosecutor to be able to set out the three areas or the three components that would have to be present. So the prohibition would be being in possession of the object that was made or adapted for killing or inflicting bodily harm, or being in possession of the object that was neither made nor adapted for killing or causing bodily harm, but that is carried with the intent to use for the purposes of killing or causing bodily harm. We relate our definition, unfortunately, it is slightly limited, in that we relate our definition directly back to the situation of a domestic violence incident, and not necessarily to the ordinary person in the street walking around with a knife. Because the issue there goes back to the intent, is am I carrying the knife for protection or am I carrying the knife simply because I'm walking around with a knife in my bag? Our definition speaks specifically, or our proposed definition speaks specifically to when these common household items are used in the commission of another offense. So the cup is used while assaulting someone. And this is where your question came in, where you refer to the issue around mindful of limiting the charges, where I said if we do not make the definition broad enough, at the end of the day, what that would do is that prosecutors would be limited to the amount of charges that they could bring against an accused. For instance, if we take the scenario of our client yesterday with the porridge bowl, she went to the police station, she was badly cut and bruised across her face. She went to the police station and made a charge. Her husband's only been charged with assault because at that stage she didn't have the medical report to escalate the charges to an assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm. But that would be all that he would be charged with. We would have to make a big fuss with the police to add another charge of being in possession or using a dangerous weapon in terms of the current legislation. And so I think what it does is it points to two things. It points to a lack of implementation in the current legislation that we have. But I think it plays a bigger, it's a bigger issue because I think it does relate to education and training, and people might not be aware of, and as well as our common perceptions. If someone comes to me and says, my husband beat me with a cup, I wouldn't necessarily take that to have been serious, unless the person has lacerations or the person has been cut. So it does relate to the seriousness of the offense. And I think it's simply that if the new legislation has been introduced, and certainly I think that we're very excited to hear that the committee has encouraged that, was decided that there be an aspect of training, and that there certainly be a budget that goes along with the provision of that training. Because I think that would go a far way in strengthening how legislation is implemented.
Worried about this all-male land up there. I ask that we don't debate with the presenters. If you want to ask questions of clarity, you're welcome to do so. Honourable Groenewald, Honourable George, Honourable Laurel.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm sorry, can I interrupt?
I was just reminded that I missed out on a question, and that was around the removal of common household items when the police come to remove firearms. And I think that we want to clarify, because it's not practical. People would have no furniture in their homes. It's simply not practical to remove any common household item. But what we are proposing is that by allowing the broadening of the scope, it wouldn't necessarily broaden the Domestic Violence Act and the removal, but it would broaden the Criminal Procedure Act in terms of the charges that can be brought. Thank you.
Honourable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just on a point of clarity, I'm going back to the definition again. Let's take the second one. Those that were adapted for killing or to cause serious bodily harm. The way I understand it, for instance, you have a baseball bat. It is not designed to kill someone. It's designed to play baseball with. But now I take it, I want to kill someone, and so I adapted it to be used to kill someone. But what is that difference in between the third one? Those that were neither made nor adapted for killing. I don't understand that. Can I just have clarity on that issue? Thank you.
Well, Groenewald, I think you had to leave last week at some point for another meeting, if I'm not mistaken. I think that the difference in the three is that the one that you are using would fall under the third one, neither adapted nor designed. The second one would, for instance, be like you find in jails all the time, is where you use a spoon and you sharpen the end of the spoon to kill somebody with that. That would be the adaption part of it. So that if I'm not mistaken, is what we discussed last week around it. Honourable George?
Madam Chair, probably, I'm not sure whether I leave this for debate. I'm just worried about an ordinary plate for eating. You can't say when that plate is, even if I'm carrying it, there is no problem. But if I break that plate into half, I can cut somebody's throat. So that is where in your last definition, I'm not comfortable.
Members, I think what we need to clarify is that what the Legal Resource Centre is saying, that they take the point that you won't be able to prohibit those items. But when the charge is laid, an extra charge can be laid. That's what they're saying. So where the police currently can only charge the person with domestic violence, they are all grievous by the arm. They would be able to say, but in the process, I broke a plate and I used the plate against the partner. That would be an additional charge then. That's what the Legal Resource Centre is trying to concern. Honourable Mzlobo, you covered. Honourable Kulabana?
Sorry. Perhaps the department could just to help here. I mean, we're getting bogged down in this business of it must be an object that is specifically created to do something criminal. I mean, as has been pointed out and everybody understands, you can kill anybody with anything. A teacup, a plate, anything. So does it not all go back to the intent? If I pick up an item, a bottle or whatever, with the intention of smacking it over Andy's head
That is now a dangerous weapon. If I'm picking it up to drink out of it, it's not a dangerous weapon. I mean, that is what this is all about, isn't it? It's about the intent. So that is where we need the clarity, surely.
I think we can discuss that when we discuss that. I think we all, in a way, are agreeing. But what the Legal Resource Centre is adding is exactly what we said last week. Also those things that were not intended or designed to kill or to do grievous bodily harm must somehow be covered so that one can do that. In thanking you for your presentation, I would also like to extend an invitation to yourselves. We have indicated to the department last week, you've tabled the 6-monthly DVA report. And when we have the hearing on that DVA report, we have indicated to the department that we do not want simple statistics. We want to have suggestions from them where the Act currently is. There are shortcomings, so that we can address those shortcomings. We would also ask yourselves to be present at that meeting and to prepare for that meeting to make an input from your side on the Domestic Violence Act and your experience around it, and specifically if you can also have a look at the shortcomings that you are experiencing, the challenges that you are experiencing in terms of the Act. I think we must be careful to not see this bill as addressing the Domestic Violence Act, addressing every single crime that can be committed. Toy gun can be used in bank robbery, or a replica gun can be used in a bank robbery, and you will only know that it's been a replica gun after the fact and not during the process itself. So it's got to deal with all of those. Maybe that brings us to the end, because the last presenters have apologized. They've indicated that they stand with the written submission. The secretary is worried that we're not going to continue with the deliberations, but we are. That brings us to the end of the public hearings. What will happen now is that I'm going to ask, first of all, the parliamentary legal advisers to take us through a presentation that they've prepared. I will then give the department an opportunity to respond to that if they so feel, and for the committee to ask questions of clarity. Thereafter, we're going to give the department an opportunity to take us through those things that we've already asked them to look at, but also those that they picked up during the public hearings, suggestions they want to make. And then we will, from there on, we will start clause by clause discussing so that we can move on. I'll remind members that we have permission to sit the whole day. We are spread for time on this bill, so we must utilize every single minute that we do have. Budget is delivered tomorrow, and then we've got to start the long and tiresome process of budget hearings as well. So let me hand over to the Ms. Isaac, and I'm correct then. Yeah, and you can take us through your presentation, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning to the Honourable members and members of the public. My presentation is very brief. The Chairperson has asked that we note any issues during the public hearing and deliberation that we would like to bring to the attention of the committee. One of the issues that was raised was the referral of the bill to the House of the National House of Traditional Leaders. This is part of the parliamentary process. When a bill is tagged by the joint tagging mechanism, they also make a decision as to whether this bill must be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. During the public hearings and prior to that, it became apparent that there may be issues that relate to customs of, and traditions of communities. The test for determining this is in terms of Section 18.1 of the Traditional Leaders Governance Framework Act. In terms of this act, any bill that pertains to the customs of traditional communities must be referred by the Secretary of Parliament to the National House of Traditional Leaders for comment. And they must be given up to 30 days from the date of referral to comment on this issue. with respect to the issue that relates to tradition, to customs of traditional communities, it is our submission that the definition of dangerous weapon now classifies all weapons as dangerous weapons. We're not speaking about the illegal or unlawful possession of the weapon, but the mere fact that it has to be classified as a dangerous weapon will have implications for traditional communities. So we are of the opinion that they should at least be given an opportunity, the National House of Traditional Leaders should be given an opportunity to comment as to what implications they feel from this definition or the classification of all traditional weapons as dangerous weapons. And also in terms of Clause 4, which does provide specific exclusion for demonstrations and gatherings, this means that people in traditional practices or doing traditional acts will now have to seek permission, and that also relates to the practice of traditional communities. I just want to note, this is asking them for submissions, and the committee will have to decide as to what weight it plays on their submission. It's merely part of the public participatory process to enable them to have a specific opportunity to comment on anything that affects the traditional practice. Just the other point, which has been spoken about quite extensively, and I'm going to comment briefly, is the definition of dangerous weapons. It's clear that the intention of the bill is to make the possession of a dangerous weapon where a person acts, there's a reasonable suspicion that there's an unlawful act, that is the intent. We are of the opinion that the definition of dangerous weapon is limiting. One of the words, or the definition says that means an object other than a firearm designed as a weapon. Firstly, the word designed in itself is limiting. Designed in its ordinary meaning refers to the original intent when the person makes that particular object. So if a weapon has not been, or if an object has not been specifically designed as a weapon, then it may create problems for when deciding as to whether an object as the legal resource center, use an example of a cup, whether a cup was not designed as a weapon. So the other issue is the wording capable of producing death. In terms of law, the proper phrasing should be causing death. Causation of death is one of the requirements of proving, so we suggest that wording be changed, and also the phrase seriously bodily harm, which is probably a typographical error, needs to be corrected. Our proposed definition is dangerous weapon means an object other than a firearm that can be used as a weapon and capable of causing death or serious bodily harm. In that way, it enables any object that is used as a weapon and is capable of causing their serious bodily harm to be classified as a dangerous weapon. With respect to clause 2.2, we would think that the wording states that the making of any threat or intimidatory behavior would be better stated as making of any threat or the display of intimidatory behavior. That's merely a phrasing of the words. And with respect to the exemption of the possession of dangerous weapons, we know that the bill does create an exemption in terms of clause 4, and the committee has already noted this, that this relates to the Regulation of Gatherings Act. The issue has been raised by various sports clubs and the hunting associations that they may not be exempt from this definition. We therefore just alert the committee that any exemption must not be done in terms of the Gathering Act. There must be a separate exemption for ordinary action. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Department, you want to react to anything at this point?
Chair, I think that some of the issues in the latter part that the parliamentary legal advisors have raised were things that the committee had asked us to look at anyway. We also would like to also request that when we do meet, that the parliamentary legal team attend those meetings, because sometimes the wording is discussed there. And I know we had asked them to attend our last meeting, so we would like to liaise with you about the wording.
On the question of the House of Traditional Leaders, I think we made it clear in our presentation that that was what the tabling office and the state law advisors had recommended. So I think if the parliamentary legal team is advising something else, that would be something which the committee would need to discuss.
Members, questions of clarity? If I can kick off. Let you discuss this with the tagging committee, your opinion around the tagging, your opinion around the House of Traditional Leaders and what was the feeling around it, because I mean I get very frustrated when legislation comes to us tagged in one way and then when we get to the committee there's a feeling that it should be tagged in a different way. I mean, we want to finish this bill. Now you're basically saying to us we have to provide for another 30 days, which we don't have. So can I, you answer that one for me? Then the second one, maybe to both the department and the legal advisors, parliamentary legal advisors. Is it the intention to talk about dangerous weapons only in regard to causing death or serious bodily harm, or is it also can be used in the execution of a crime? Because then we need to look at that as well, because nowhere are we looking at that. We're looking at death and serious bodily harm. But it can also be that this guy's got a 3 o'clock in the morning and he's got a wire cutter or something like that in the process or wanting to break in somewhere, etc. Is that the intention? If it's not the intention, then tell us so that we don't go too far. Because what I'm basically asking is whether we shouldn't put in or to be used in the commission of crime. Those were from me. Members? Honourable Kula Barnard?
That we had a discussion, and I don't know how far along you are with it, but weapons that are used at traditional functions, weddings, etc., were going to be exempt. Now, if that goes, I just want to wait so the chip, if that goes in, if there is that exemption, then in fact, I believe it would not have to go before the traditional leaders. That makes sense to me, because then it's exempt for any marriages. I mean, the Shembe Church, for heaven's sake, 3 and 5 million people go there, many of whom have their traditional gear on. Are you now going to say they must all get permission? It's just, obviously, an exemption for all of those would surely give us a blanket exemption from having to take this bill to the traditional court. That's the question I'm asking the department.
Honourable Zorba?
Chairperson, you remember I asked this question of tagging at the beginning because I was referring to the exemptions. Because in the exemptions, there are cultural attires and cultural equipment and weddings and everything, what my colleague is saying. Now, if the state law advisor referred to that...
Parliamentary law advisor.
Oh, parliamentary law advisor. I get confused somewhere. Can there be a clarity so that I will understand exactly where we are and what are we trying to do so that we know exactly what we're talking about, please?
Yeah, can I also ask in that regard... The members' questions that just remind me of that. Under the Gatherings Act, what does it say around cultural activities, traditional activities, sports activities, etc.? If you could just remind us about what it says currently. Honourable George?
In traditional life, there are weapons which are used for rituals. For instance, in an African home, especially every household, a firstborn, got what you call an assegai. And that assegai is so treated, it's not used for anything else. It's not touched by everybody in the family. It's touched by the elders in the family, because that assegai
if it's already been raised, but I also just want clarity. I mentioned specifically martial arts. Okay, is it?
The department's still got to present on those things that we've asked that must be included in sport in a broader sense is one of those. Okay, can I ask that the parliamentary law advisors respond first and then to the department?
Thank you, Chair. With respect to the tagging, the way it works is that legal services gets the bill and then we give an opinion to the JTM and they will decide as to whether they agree or not. And one of the findings we make is whether it needs to be referred in terms of Section 81 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. In respect of this bill, we do not see this issue at that time regarding traditional weapons now being classified as dangerous weapons. It seemed on our initial reading that it would be excluded in terms of the Gatherings Act. During the committee meetings, it became apparent that all weapons will now, traditional weapons will be classified as dangerous weapons. So that's why we are bringing it to the committee's attention. It's unfortunate that it is at this stage, but nonetheless, we just wanted to alert the committee so they can make an informed decision of this matter.
But did you take in consideration that in fact it will be exempted again? I mean, it's the intent that will be in this bill. The use of it for legal and traditional purposes will be exempted. Did you take that in consideration?
Yes, ma'am. The issue is not so much the exemption, but that it relates to the practices of traditional communities. The section, I'm just going to quote the section quickly. It states that any parliamentary bill pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional communities must, before it is passed by the House of Parliament where it was introduced, refer to the Secretary, by the Secretary to Parliament, to the National House of Traditional Leaders for its comment. The fact that there is an exemption, we need to know whether the National House of Traditional Leaders agrees with this, whether it's wide enough, whether what is the impact on their traditions. So it's more asking them for specific comments because it does pertain, the exemption pertains to their tradition. So it's merely requesting that they comment and this part forms part of the public participation process. But it is a decision for the committee to make as to whether they agree with this particular opinion or not.
Just before General Jacobs responds, I just want to clarify, people keep talking about now dangerous weapons. There is a Dangerous Weapons Act that has been in existence, which is in fact much broader and has had much greater impact on cultural events than the current dangerous weapons that has an exclusion clause. So I'm not saying that it should or shouldn't be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders. I'm just saying that people keep talking about now we reclassify dangerous weapons. In actual fact, the previous Dangerous Weapons Act that was in existence was much broader than what is before Parliament today. So I just want to clarify that, but maybe General Jacobs can refer to the questions raised specifically by the Chair about what the Gatherings Act, etc. says.
Thank you, Chair. You will recall that we spent a lot of time actually on the definition of gathering and demonstration, and really that relates to the criticizing, discussing, attacking, or it is actually a protest gathering that's addressed by the Regulation of Gatherings Act. Chair, if I can go to the clause that really I think triggered the issue about consultation with the House of Traditional Leaders. It is the exception in the Regulation of Gatherings Act that we have inserted that unless the responsible officer has approved under specific conditions the possession of any article mentioned in paragraphs A and B during a gathering or demonstration for cultural or religious purposes or historical enactments. Chair, after the discussions we had on the issue of the nature of gathering, our proposal is actually, and that will have to be considered by the committee, is that exception should actually be deleted, because any normal cultural gathering, etc., would not be a protest gathering which falls within the definition of the Regulations Gathering Act. So in terms of the proposal we want to make, is that exception should actually be deleted here, because it's actually not applicable in terms of the nature of what a gathering is in terms of the Regulation of Gatherings Act. But Chair, I appreciate that if the bill reads in a certain manner it must be referred, of course that's a separate issue that needs to be discussed. But should the committee approve this proposal, I think it would not directly affect the House of Traditional Leaders. Of course, the definition is wide enough, whatever definition we use, whether it's an object designed as a weapon, it could be an assegai, or whether it's any other item, household item or whatever, it might fall within that ambit. But I think by removing, if we remove this exception, it will actually remove any direct reference to the issue of for cultural or religious purposes or enactments. Thank you. And I must say, what was also included there is enactments. That's like the Boer War enactments and all that. And those are not really covered directly in terms of the regulation of the Gatherings Act. Thank you, Chair.
Following legal advisors, if that happens?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, our issue is more about the classification of all traditional weapons as a dangerous weapon. Because if someone is carrying it, it immediately says it's going to become, in terms of this definition, it will be classified as a dangerous weapon. It's not the possession that becomes unlawful, but that it is classified. And the issue that we have is should the House of Traditional Leaders not be able to comment on this and raise their issues, because this is a specific requirement in terms of legislation passed by Parliament.
But the traditional weapons are not mentioned. It is the intent that is the issue. And it's not mentioned as much as a stone is not mentioned, a brick is not mentioned, a martial arts is not mentioned. We're not mentioning that, so I don't quite get it. I'm going to rule on this now. In terms of, I want the department and the parliamentary law advisors to meet with the tagging committees as soon as possible and clarify this issue for us and come back with a united approach around this thing. If the decision is from your side that we should do it, I'm talking from the tagging mechanism side that we should do it, then we have no choice in it. But I also think it's unfair to expect of this committee to make that decision. It's definitely not within our powers to make that decision in the end. I mean, it's the Secretary of Parliament that must refer. So let the right bodies deal with it and come back to this committee on that issue. And we intend finishing this bill pretty soon, because we if we move quickly today, we can have all the changes and things done by the end of business today, which means one more reading for ourselves in the committee and voting then that remains. So I'm urging you that takes place within the next 24 hours. That meeting takes place within the next 24 hours. Honourable Malawati.
Chair, can they also look at what General Jacobs has just mentioned of the division of the exemption of...
Yeah, that's why I say that meeting must be between... It's not Parliament's law advisors meeting with the tagging mechanisms. It's Parliament, the department, and their meeting, so that we have a full picture on the scenes and within the next 24 hours, please. Members, I'm now going to hand over to the department to take us through proposed changes that you make as a result of the public hearings that we have had, and also things that the committee has picked up even before the public hearings, and then we will take the ball again from its beginning.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, can I just hand out the...
Thank you.
that side of the room, please. And then I'm going to ask Honourable Lord to move on.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for the disruption, but I didn't want to hand the documents out with your permission, without your permission. Chair, there's three documents before us now. The first one is the amendments. If we say they agree to, it's totally subject to the committee's agreement to that. The second document, we have taken the bill as it is at the moment. And what we have done is we have showed the actual amendments on the bill with the deleted parts in red and strike through and the inserted parts in blue. Chair, and I'm going to use that document because I think it's the most useful in terms of understanding what we are proposing, and after we have made the decisions on what the committee actually agreed to or not, we can then amend the document reflecting the changes in a more technical way, Chair. Thank you, Chair. The first amendment that we propose is on page 2 of that second document. You'll see we have deleted dangerous weapon as it was.
Mr. Jacobs, General Jacobs, one second, because we've got all three binded together, so it's the middle one that he's speaking to, the middle one, the one with the red and the blue.
Thank you, Chair. So what we've inserted is the proposal in blue that a dangerous weapon means any object other than a firearm capable of inflicting death or serious bodily harm if it were used to commit an assault. And Chair, I just want to mention that we've actually, when we looked at the definition, we consulted with the state law advisors and we took into account also the submissions that were made today. So it's not a matter that we've ignored it or that we haven't yet looked at it, but we've really seriously looked at the definition, especially the one from Legal Resources Center. It is just that the way in which they propose is really breaking it down into a lot of sub-issues. And when you look at it together, this definition that we propose now is actually covering all those instances. The state law advisors specifically say they think this is the definition that would not really be able to be contested in court. So that is what we want to propose. Jane, I think, especially in view of the importance of the definition, I think the committee would want to discuss that issue separately before we maybe continue, or shall I just go through it? Thank you, Chair. Chair, then the next proposal is that we delete the definition of firearm as well as the definition of imitation firearm, and that will be clear when we get to the other amendments where we propose an amendment to the Firearms Control Act. Instead of addressing the issue of firearms in this bill, Chair. Chair, the next amendment is just the heading of Clause 2, the prohibition of possession of dangerous weapons, just to delete the reference to firearms and replicas or imitation firearms. And then in Clause 2, that the offence should read, any person who is in possession of any dangerous weapon, under circumstances which may raise a reasonable suspicion that the person intends to use the dangerous weapon for an unlawful purpose, is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years. Then, in subclause 2, to also just delete the reference to firearm, replica or imitation firearm, so it will read, in determining whether a person intends to use the dangerous weapon for an unlawful purpose, all relevant factors including but not limited to the following must be taken into account. Chair, the factors remain the same except for in C where we delete the reference to firearm, replica or imitation firearm, and to D where that is also deleted. And then what we propose, and it also relates to a lot of submissions that were made, the issue about the group, Chair, this is really just a proposal from our side. It might need some discussion whether we actually need to remove that, but that was one of the issues that was raised in the committee. So just to delete the clause that says whether the person who is possessing the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica or imitation firearm was found was at the time part of a group of persons who were also in possession of such items. Chair, the next is a clause, proposed clause 3 to be inserted in the bill, and that relates to the exceptions or exemptions that we have discussed. And this is the way the state law advisors have advised that we address it, to say that the Act does not apply to the following activities. That A will be the possession of dangerous weapons in pursuit of any lawful employment, duty or activity. And Chair, that would cover the activities, for example, of private security and sports activities and the martial arts and all that issues. The second one is possession of dangerous weapons during the participation in any lawful sport, that sport as well, recreation or entertainment, or C, legitimate collection, display or exhibition of weapons. Chair, when we get to clause 4, it is just an amendment of the numbering. And the new clause 5, that is the reference to what I've alluded to in previously, is that we propose to delete in paragraph B the words, unless the responsible officer has approved under specific conditions the possession of any article mentioned in paragraphs A and B during a gathering or demonstration for cultural or religious purposes or historical enactments. And Chair, that is where I said that we took into account the definition in the Regulation of Gatherings Act of what is meant in that act with a gathering or a demonstration. Chair, the next amendment on page 5 is to propose an amendment of the Firearms Control Act. And you will recall, Chair, that there's already an existing provision that prohibits the possession of a firearm, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm, imitation firearm and ammunition with intent to commit an offence, or to use the firearm, air gun, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm, or an imitation firearm to resist arrest or prevent the arrest of another person. And then we also propose to insert those same exceptions, and I think, Chair, that actually contributes to the Firearms Act by having the same exceptions that you have in the Dangerous Weapons Bill. In determining whether a person intends to use the firearm, air gun, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm, or imitation firearm for an unlawful purpose, and Chair, maybe we just thought here that there's a reference to unlawful purpose, we should align it with the B part, to say with intent to commit an offence. Otherwise, there might be some disparity between the two. All relevant factors, including but not limited to the following, must be taken into account. The place and time where the person is found, the general behaviour of the person, including the making of any threat or intimidatory behaviour, the manner in which the firearm, air gun, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm or imitation firearm is carried or displayed, or whether the possession of the firearm, air gun, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm or imitation firearm was within the context of drug dealing, gang association or any other organized crime activity. And then 10B, also the same exceptions. The provisions of subsection 10B do not apply to the following activities: the pursuit of any lawful employment, duty or activity, the participation in any lawful sport, recreation or entertainment, or the legitimate collection, display or exhibition of a firearm, air gun, deactivated firearm, muzzle-loading firearm, or imitation firearm. And Chair, I think the whole context of this section is that also a licensed firearm can be abused for committing an offence, and I think that was why there was already such a clause in the Firearms Control Act. And maybe in terms also of policing and training and all that, it's better to address this issue in the Firearms Control Act rather than in the Dangerous Weapons Act. Chair, these are the amendments that we picked up and that the committee asked us to look at. If there's any other proposal, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
have it, can we just get, first of all, get questions, if there's any questions of clarity at this stage. I see the Honourable, can I ask Honourable Glover just to switch off his microphone, please? No, that's fine. I see Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Glover, Honourable Tilly, Honourable Kulabarnat, and myself.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is more a technical question. Is it appropriate to make an amendment, to, for instance in this case, to the Firearms Control Act and the Gatherings Act by this Act? Don't we have to make the amendments in those acts itself? No, it's a technical question I'm just asking. For me, it just sounds that you're using this bill actually, or this Act, to amend another Act. Why don't we amend that specific Act? That's my first, my one question. And then I want to ask Chairperson my second one. Where was it? It was on the Gatherings Act. I can't put my finger on it now. I just want to ask, does that mean, because that's the way I read it here, say for instance you have a protest march. Let's talk, say farm owners for instance. Now you get your farmers and everybody there, they're carrying their firearms with them, legally, because they always carry it with them. Does, and the way I interpreted it is that in that specific case, they can participate in the protest arms, but they will have to abandon their firearms. I don't think that is practical.
Honourable Groenewald, we expect that of strikers. We expect that of strikers. Honourable Global, your question?
Chairperson, on page 3, I just want to get the understanding on paragraph D. This is under the prohibition of possession of dangerous weapon. Paragraph D on that one. Whether the possession of dangerous weapon was within the context of drug dealing, gang association, and organized crime activity. What does that mean, really? In a real sense, what does it mean? Because my understanding will mean something else. Maybe the understanding of the drafters will mean something else. What do you mean by that? Can you just elaborate on that one so that I will be in power with you? Thank you very much.
Honourable Chin.
This is also a point of understanding. Traditionally, a man, when he leaves home, must have his men, when they go to gatherings, family gatherings or traditional gatherings, they must have their stick. I don't know how, if that, because they are dangerous weapons. Are they good? How would you control that, or, you know, that they are dangerous, they can be dangerous weapons, when the police come in, they may arrest them. That's the point of understanding.
I think I've got that question. Honourable Kulabarnat.
Thank you, Chair. Two issues I need to clarify. I've got a problem with the sentence in 2D.
Ooh.
2D. Now, because you use this phrase, so you're saying the general behavior of the person, including making a threat, and then you go on to say, okay, we'll detail it in the context of drug dealing, gang association, or organized crime. I don't see anywhere here, and perhaps this is what the Chair was alluding to earlier, where it says anything about an individual in the process of or heading to commit a specific crime. They are not part of a drug dealing, gang, organized crime, or anything else. They may not even look suspicious. They may just creep around the back of a house and then suddenly, it's just not covered yet. So I think the difficulty in specifying particular areas of crime, the fear always is surely that you may leave one out, or it closes the gap so you can't add another one in later. If you suddenly realize that that there's another area that you haven't included yet, you have a problem. So I have a problem with that. And the second one takes us back to the cultural issue. I mean, you refer to lawful employment, participation in sport, recreational entertainment. You refer to a legitimate collection. Nowhere does it refer to any cultural activity. Nowhere does it refer to even religious activities such as the Shembe Church, where people arrive with their weapons and fully dressed in their regalia by the million, literally by the million, over a weekend. It's not referred to here. Please clarify.
My questions. I think, first of all, the long title will have to be cleaned up as well, obviously, to provide for certain prohibitions. You need to take our firearm and replica firearm out of there as well. Then, if I can spend a minute on the definition, I don't think the definition is complete either. Because throughout the bill, you actually do refer to the commission of crime, and you refer to grievous bodily harm, assault, murder. Here you just refer in the definition to assault, to commit assault. So what about the other commissions of crime, general crime, and of murder? I mean, all I'm saying is alignment that needs to take place within the definition. Then if you know, just to prove my point is 2-1 then, as it is now adapted, it refers to unlawful purpose, yet in the definition we only refer to assault. And shouldn't we then say in the definition, rather than say unlawful purpose, which includes then assault, assault GBHs, murder, whatever else may be. I also got concerns about this issue of gangs and of organized crime and drugs. Why don't we include rape then? Gang rape. I'm just making a point. The point is, why are we limiting it to those three? And I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but give us the motivation why you are saying that it should be that way. Because surely, if we take that in Boyson's case, there is a prime example of why gang rape can be included in it. But if we start including some and we exclude others, we need to understand why you are doing it. And I don't think we quite get that picture yet of why you are doing it. What was the motivation to go the exemption road rather than to say it is unlawful to carry a dangerous weapon unless? This is what you've got there is the Australian model. It's Australian wording as well. But they just put in the positive more than the negative. So I'm just wondering, would it not be clearer if we say it is unlawful to carry a dangerous weapon unless for the purpose of lawful employment, etc., the other three? I'm just asking that question. So if you can respond to that. You've got another question. Okay, Honourable Groenewald, your last question, then I want us to them to respond, and then we will take the process from there.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to, on clause 2, we say in determining whether a person intends to use a dangerous weapon for an unlawful purpose, I've raised my concerns about the misuse, and specifically it says in C, the manner in which the dangerous weapon is carried or displayed. That's very, very vague. The manner in which it is carried. The others are more explicit, the place and the time, the general behavior, and that. So the other actions mentioned here are more specific as far as I'm concerned, but the way in which you carry it, that's a bit very vague. Can I have more explanation on that, please?
What
would
you
going to
respond?
I'll respond to some of the issues, and then General Jacobs will also speak to some of the issues. I just wanted to
respond to the issue of the amending legislation through other legislation. That's common. It happens all the time. There's nothing technically wrong with doing that. When you bring a piece of legislation, you find that you need to amend other pieces of legislation. There's nothing technically wrong or strange about that. And a classic example is, for example, the Civilian Secretary for Police Act and Armed Act, both of which amended. So the Civilian Secretary for Police amended the Domestic Violence Act. So it happens when you're dealing with legislation and you're dealing with overlaps that you amend pieces of legislation through other pieces of legislation. There's nothing strange or wrong with that. The other thing I wanted to raise was the issue of the farmers and the issue that Honourable Member Groenewald raised about the farmers. Yes, they would not be allowed to carry their firearms at a public demonstration under this law, because you can't have one rule for some people and another rule for others. And if we outlaw the carrying of dangerous weapons at gatherings, we outlaw it across the board, whether it's farmers or communities. They're not allowed to carry it because the Constitution, and we refer to the Constitution in this regard, the Constitution says unarmed peaceful protests, and that's what we're referring to in this piece of legislation. So just to be clear, that it's in line with the Constitution and applies to everybody across the board. I'll ask General Jenkins to deal with some of the other issues raised.
Chair, thank you. I will start from the beginning of the bill. Firstly, your reference to the changing of the long title. We will have to attend to that. Secondly, there were some observations made regarding the dangerous weapon definition, and I totally agree with the fact that we can refer to dangerous weapon means any object other than a firearm capable of inflicting death or serious bodily harm if it were used for an unlawful purpose. I agree with that, Chair. I think it will actually makes it more user-friendly in terms of the rest of the bill. Chair, there was reference in our previous discussion on the issue of the possession of other items for other purposes. There is a prohibition on the possession of, for example, housebreaking equipment, which would include the objects that you've mentioned. But I think if we widen the definition to include for an unlawful purpose, I think it will cover that in any event. Chair, one of the questions was related to the clause 2C, the manner in which the dangerous weapon is carried or displayed. Of course, I realize there are many ways, you know, in which you will carry a stick. One might be more intimidatory than the others. But, for example, a person who has a pocket knife in his pocket, that's the manner in which he carries it. That wouldn't pose any threat. But if I walk with a pocket knife or a flick knife or something that's open, and I walk around as if I'm looking for trouble, it will be something totally different. And see, it's really, I must say, from a drafting point of view, we were faced with the position that we must lay down certain criteria that the police officer must take into account. And it's really difficult to determine and to really think of all possible instances. And I think that also relates to the D part within the context of drug dealing. And specifically, if you would look at the issue of gang association, you get a gang walking in the street with tattoos on them and whatever. Clearly, you can clearly see this is a gang. And they have knives in their hands or other weapons that they carry with them. And that is certainly different from a group of students walking down the road. You can, and as I said, these are factors that must be taken into account. You will also have to take into account the place and time where the people are found, etc. So what I'm saying, it is difficult to really lay down this criteria because you need to give some guideline to the police officer, not to just willy-nilly exercise his discretion and arrest someone and thereafter in court the person can give a proper explanation. Because, Chair, if I listen to some of the proposals we had in the discussions, that was, if you look at the present act, it says that the person must prove that he did not want to commit an offence. And we are following a totally different approach here. The police officer must exercise his discretion. We must give him some guidelines in order to make a proper decision. And we thought that these are the issues. If you take drug dealing, for instance, the police would come into a garage. There would be a few people there. and a lot of them have like knives with them and what that, but it's clear that they are working with drugs and things there, and it's clear that they use, or they possibly intend to use this weapon to commit an offence. Because if you look at the issue of organized crime, that fear and intimidation is an inherent part of organized crime. So that is what led us to include those issues. But Chair, I hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, what do you include? What are the other offences that you might include there? So I agree that we must look critically at that section, and maybe we can improve on it or have an alternative for it. But those are the issues that actually prompted us, and also on the last one that we've actually proposed to delete, a group of people which act in a certain manner. But once again, it's very difficult to clearly define. But I think we must really get to some way where we can really inform the police officer, where we can train the police officer, that you don't simply arrest any person or every person that has some object within that. And especially now that we have the wider definition, we must really see to it that there is enough guidance for the police officer in exercising his discretion. Chair, the issue you've mentioned about the structure of Clause 3, to say that it's unlawful unless, we can really look at that proposal, Chair. I think we have, as you've said, we have followed the Australian model, except that we haven't included the part about private defence or self-defence. And I think it might fit into to say, use the wording that you've mentioned, Chair, to say unless these issues are present. Chair, I hope I've covered all the issues.
We're going to continue. Ms. Kulibana, can I stand over till we get back, because lunch has been ready since 4:15. I don't know why so early. We carry on when we come back. Lunch is ready. It is now, let's say, 12:30. Can I ask members, this is that we have a 45-minute break. Lunch is ready outside. I know members haven't had time to go to their offices, so I want to make some time for that as well. So if we can be back 1:15, is that fine? Okay, thank you very much. Members, you would be able to leave your stuff here.